Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here. Special episode of the Jug Life Podcast. We continue here from Spokane, Washington, USAPL Raw Nationals. I have Marific Max Montana as my co-host. And we are joined today by the wonderful Wade Johnson. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great, and I'm really happy to be here with you guys. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. So when I first started coming to USAPL meets, it was 2014 Nationals was the first real big one I was at. And I couldn't tell you how out of place I felt. And I found one man there, Steve Goggins, who I knew from my dark world of untested powerlifting. And he and I gave each other a knowing look, like, yes, one of these things is not like the other. One of these things just doesn't belong. And then it was the next year in which Jennifer Milliken entered the USAPL scene, Atlanta Nationals, and I stumbled upon a familiar face from my early powerlifting days, Wade Johnson. And I was like, that guy's even more out of place than I am. Because for a long time, Wade occupied the infamous spot of head ref in the SPF, correct?
Well, I head judged several meets. A lot of I was a head judge at your first powerlifting meet.
Second, yeah. SPF Pro Am, Knoxville, Days In. Fantastic place.
Big budget meet.
Big budget. And then I think it was it wasn't Cincinnati, it was just south of Cincinnati.
Yeah, Power Station Pro Am.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm.
So the position that I held early on was he asked me to be on his board. And I've been on various boards, you know, and that's not common or public knowledge. And it's not something I broadcasted quite a bit, but I've been on various boards, whether it be their rules committee or, you know, as crazy as that may sound to some. But they voted me as their chairman of the board, and he has a board and all those types of things, Jesse does. And that was my primary function. And then I was brought on to help him grow it. And that was a project that I was very fond of doing. And that's a long, long, long story. But a lot of what you saw me do is when in the developmental days, like Mark Bell had us come out to Sacramento. And when Jesse was really cultivating, I would go, you know, having meet experience running meets, you know, and then running platforms and things of that nature. That kind of became my primary function.
And I think, you know, powerlifting has grown so much in the last couple of years that people who have come into the sport in the last 5 years, they don't have a good perspective on this. But yeah, certainly all three of us have experienced this bygone era now of powerlifting.
Yeah, true.
But such a different time. I did my first meet the end of 2010. I was sponsored by Elite FTS. The next two meets I did, SPF Pro-Am meets, Knoxville, Tennessee, Cincinnati, Ohio. I was lifting on the amateur day raw, maybe one of five raw lifters among the amateur multiply lifters. And then the next day was the pro multiply lifters, Westside, Big Iron, you know, at the time was the pinnacle of powerlifting. Yeah. And it was such a interesting, eye-opening kind of experience for me, but it was just, powerlifting was in a much different place then than it is now. And, you know, a lot of this transition, you know, to raw and everything probably came about as backlash against a lot of that stuff. So you were all the way through, you know, like from the beginning of the SPF to what I would describe as that 2010 to 2012, the peak of its decadence, and now are in the back room with, you know, coaching and helping out with IPF world champion, multi-time world champion, Jen Milliken. And the two farthest places the two farthest things they could possibly be. What do you think, as you were in that time in the SPF, what was sort of the edict about the judging and like, did you look at these squats and
here's the truth. And I will say this, and I think you both will agree, we have a tendency in this day and age of not only the internet but social media, you'll see something that is questionable, or in some instances, I'm in the chair, I have no qualms telling you, that lift was high. I see the video. And I will tell you this also, what you see in the judge's chair versus someone even over your shoulder with a phone camera is not the same thing. That does not mean I'm going, you know, they were all clearly in. Well, that's bullshit, and we know it is. Early on, the first half of my term with the SPF, I was told specifically, you know, by the president, I don't want you judging depth from the front. All right, I got no problem with that. You know, I'll take care of everything else and the commands, and, you know, I'll fully expect my side judges to take care of that. And clearly that didn't happen. And I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. We all did the very best that we could at the time. And it became an issue. You know, I'm long past the point of worrying what anybody thinks about me. If you don't like me, that's fine. You know, I got no problem with that. But we tend to focus on close calls. And that's, you know, we'll dial it down and get a still of it. And unless you've been in the seat, you know, when someone like Dave Hoff is benching 1,000 pounds, knowing that their life is clearly in the balance if something goes wrong, you have that much time to make a call. And so there were several times where, you know, talking about, because this is what we're talking about is the squat. We're ultimately talking about that. You saw where there were so many squats that were borderline, and the side judges passed it. And, you know, my whole involvement, and I think you and I were talking about this last night, is I wanted to help Jesse cultivate. Jesse's an old friend of mine from when he lit, you know, was a big APF guy, you know, and I'm just a guy that loves strength sports. But I had an opportunity to help cultivate that. And my hope, being a lifetime drug-free lifter, and that may surprise people, but I'm lifetime drug-free. I just liked putting on all the gear just to see, you know, what can I do? How far could I push myself? And so I always wanted to ultimately, long ago, I was the APA regional chair for the Southeast. And we had a tested and a non-tested division. And that was really the direction that I wanted to go. And clearly that was never going to happen. Uh-huh. And I knew that. The controversy, to kind of go back before I get too long-winded, is about halfway through my term, I resigned the position. I said, we have to tighten up the judging. There are some things that we have to change that I think, you know, I think you'll get the onslaught of people that, you know, if I can just fool one of the side judges, you know, I get a good squat in. And I think, you know, multiplied lifters by and large believe that. I'm not downing that, you know. We all want to push and bend the rules as much as we can. And anybody that says otherwise is full of shit. That's just the way it is. And so, I mean, that's why in NASCAR, they go through inspection and everything else. So, you know, that's kind of my perspective on it. But I had resigned the position. Jesse and I talked about it. And I think you'll see that we tightened it up a little bit. And when I made my exit, the reason why I did is I felt like it was going a different direction. And that's not a slight against Jesse and the SPF. I wish them nothing but great stuff. And I still have lifters that want to lift there because it's convenient, it's close to home.
Well, I think when there was that time of it getting tightened back up a little bit, you saw some prominent lifters and gyms move away from the SPF
well,
at that
course.
Time.
Well, of course, and I understand that. Yeah. You know, I understand that. You know, I'm not sure what you say to that other than, you know, that's kind of the nature of the game. And the multiplied lifting it's a little bit different. But I'll always tell you, having sat in the chair for every, you know, I've judged strongman, I've judged Olympic weightlifting, and I've judged some of the biggest lifts in the history of powerlifting. It's really easy to be a scrutinizing judge when everybody's squatting ass to ankles. when you got somebody that's got double-ply briefs and a canvas suit on, if you're judging the suit and not the body, and there's a lot of people out there that disagree with it, and I'm fine with that, but if you don't judge the body, nobody, of any lift of consequence, everybody bombs. Everybody. You know, and so it takes, I think it takes a particular set of skills to be able to judge with any type of accuracy. You know, I don't deny, I've seen the videos just like, you know, we were talking about. There's clearly a very fine line of what is good and not good. And we have a tendency, it's an extreme part of the sport, and you'll see those lifts, you know, get, a lot of them will get, you know, given 2-1.
So, you know, as I look back sort of at the history of squat judging, if you will, some of this was before my time as a powerlifter, but, you know, I read outlaws from time to time and look at all these debates, especially, you know, several years ago when it was really intense, kind of this multiply versus raw beef, and, you know, I had probably had a hand in stirring a lot of that controversy. But I see a lot of it as like you give them an inch and they take a mile kind of thing. That Brent Mixel had made this huge squat. And I wasn't around at the time, but I've been told by people who were that there was controversy around his depth at the time. But now, if you were to take his lift from, what was that, like 2007, maybe?
In the early days of the WPO, yeah. And before, sure.
And take that compared to, let's call it 2004. Take the 2004 multiply squats at the WPO and Chuck Vogelpohl and everything compared to like a 2011 one. They're clearly different
look at them. You're right, you're right.
You know, you think it was a thing where this guy broke a record an eighth of an inch high, and then another guy broke one an eighth of an inch higher than him? Well, it was just sort of a gradual
deal? It was one of those things where, you know, and that was kind of the genesis of me kind of stepping away initially, because I thought it was one thing for me as the head. I had no problem being the guy thrown under the bus. Mm-hmm. You're blaming, you know, Wade Johnson is the reason why the sport's going to hell. No, it's really not, but that's fine. I kept depending on, we'd have people in the chair that would call the depth on the side. And there's a lot of pressure. I mean, we talked about that. But did I feel pressure from these big gyms or, you know, like someone like Dan Degg or Louis Simmons over my shoulder? The answer is no. And I'll tell you a story about that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
To that effect, I was told once by a very prominent lifter from the most prominent of multiply gyms who then switched to lifting raw. And people can probably fill in the blanks of the people I'm talking about here. I said, when you were doing these squats, did you think that they were good? And he said, yes, they did. And I was like, well, what did your coach you to on depth? Because I'm looking at it like there's no fucking way you could have ever thought this was good. But he said that the coach instructed them to, and I quote, squat until the suit kicks in, I'll take care of the judges. Does that resonate with
you
at all?
I was so rarely on the side.
Yeah.
So it was never an issue for me. Now, I've had people in my ear and stuff like that, and I've, you know, I would say, you know, I'd make sure that they understood that, you know, they were needed to get away from me. But again, until we started calling where there was a conscious, Jesse even posted about it. So you know the head judge is calling depth, and that was one of the changes that we made. Now, he may deny that, and that's fine. I'm telling you that that's what happened. And you saw the judging tighten up. But it's an extreme sport, and I think you can see where a lot of people treated both of those. It's all powerlifting, but clearly how we view multiply lifting, especially now, especially the last 10 years, is way different. But allow me to tell you a story.
Please do.
Because it's one of those things where I got blamed for so many things, and there's a couple of scenarios just to give you an idea. It was the meet that you were at, the pro power station program.
All right.
Donnie Thompson was lifting, and I got blamed for Donnie Thompson getting that 3,000-pound total. I was a side judge for those squats. Mm-hmm. Donnie took two attempts. The first one, I timed him out. The second one, he got 2-1. I'll give you a guess who threw the red. I did. So what else do you want me to do? You know?
Yeah.
You'll get on the internet, you know, Wade Johnson trashed this meet. I wasn't even in the fucking country, let alone at the meet. I wasn't even there. And there was, Jesse would do his Ironman competition, and we finally convinced him to change the date. It was always the same weekend as at the Arnold, when I would always see you guys at the Arnold, because I was there. I did a lot of times I was there helping Scott DePanfilis in the Body Tech USA days. And I would get blamed for some high squat from some prominent lifter. And I wasn't even, not only was I not at the meet, I wasn't even in the state. You know, so does that mean anytime you see a video collage and I'm in the head chair that some of those squats aren't high? There's no way I can go, they were in. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, I did what I was asked to do, and I tried to make an impact. And I did my job. I helped him cultivate that to prominence. And we saw a lot of cool things happen, a lot of cool meets that you were part of. I would love to have had it in a better arena, so to speak, but it was what it was.
The ballroom at the Days Inn in Knoxville, it's a good story now. At least 7 years later, it's a good story.
But, that kind of lends to the whole, this is where we're at, this huge growth. For a lot of various reasons, in strength sports and primarily powerlifting, we're at a pivotal point to where, how do we get away from just some big hotel ball? At the end of the day, it's a nicer hotel, and it's a big, but it's still a big hotel ballroom. Yeah. How do we create something, because look at CrossFit Games. Well, when that came out, we all made fun of CrossFit. Uh-huh. And don't you lie, I'm looking square at you. You fucking did it just like I did.
Oh, of course.
Oh, they're pussies and they suck. Who wouldn't want to be, now everybody's, Rich Froning's an hour and a half down the road from me. And think he's making any money?
Yeah.
and look at the prominence of the games. Now we all watch. I watch it. I have no qualms telling you. But it's the same, look at the X Games. ESPN had these guys riding snow shovels down the side of a hill, and we all laughed. Well, who's fucking laughing now? You got the redheaded kid that won.
Sean White. Yeah.
And he's got like a credit card commercial in Big Red, and I'm sure they're paying him more than tens of dollars, to do those things. And that's what that's the whole reason why I got involved like I did. I wanted to find an avenue to help bring that to bigger prominence. I fell a little short of that.
So this is something that Max and I were talking about at breakfast today, and something I've thought about a lot and talked about a lot is ways to better present powerlifting. Throw an idea out for me here.
Well, I think... Clearly, I've been, involved in a little bit of controversy in my history. So I'm going to say a few things, and you're allowed to stop me at any time. This whole episode with the Kearns Open, and the meet director, and you saw how all that went about. There's something that all of us can learn from that. There is somebody out there, whether you like the meet director or not, This person has convinced somebody, I don't care how she did it, but she did it, and there's a shit pile of money on the table for a lifter.
Much less money this year, though.
Well, we all knew that was coming.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But the point is it's happened.
So about 3 hours from now in Australia, they'll have the big dogs meet, and that's $22,000 for first place, and... Yeah, all the way down to like 1,000 for eighth place, I believe.
But what do we do, to where you have some of your prominent... How do I get Jennifer Milliken in a position where she can not necessarily make a living, but supplement her income for real? And is that taking ass shots on Instagram? Well, I don't think so. I mean, I know people that have done well, and you're seeing someone like... A couple of them. That are making some money, and I know it's Meg Squats. I just know her. I don't know her personally, but she's got like a Target deal or something like that. we're going to have to do some things collectively because we're still kind of blazing a trail to create. There's the only way to do this is to have a real pro outlet. And you're going to have things like we had last night to where people have an urgency, because it's never going to be the lifters. It's going to be about how many asses can you put in a seat to watch something. Well, we used to think that it would be like you and I talking shit to each other on the internet and going to a pro-am meet. They don't want to see us.
Yeah.
They don't. But you have something like last night, and people are excited. They're here. There's people that are here to see what we saw last night. And so we have to create this urgency where people are willing to buy a ticket to sit in the chair and watch something like that and then feel good about spending the money that they did to do that. And then we've got to color outside the lines a little bit with sponsorship that we're bringing in. It's easy when someone is selling gear or singlets or belts, and those are great things, you know, but we've got to get to the point where you have someone like a Jennifer or a Jennifer Thompson or a Samantha Calhoun, for, you know, the three that lifted last night, where they're getting stipends from these companies and stuff like that, and where you can get to the point where you can offer prize money. I have no idea, you know, the money situation here, but I know from running meets, I ran the 2005 Worlds for the WPA at Opryland Hotel, and I will tell you, it was not cheap. You know, so while there's a lot of money being spent, it takes a lot of money to pull something like this off. And, you know, so the direction we have to go is, as athletes and coaches, we have to work well with the sponsors. We have to do more.
Do you think that like the fact of the matter is that powerlifting doesn't reach the mainstream enough? And that's why, like, I mean, while you've got companies down there selling shirts and singlets and wraps, largely they're selling, their customer base is the people competing in the meet, right?
Right.
Where you don't have like people walking around in a Joe Montana, you know, jersey. And then, you know what I mean? Like, this is bridging the gap between,
sure,
you know, well, mainstream.
Nonetheless, take a look. I'm always going to go back to look at what's being successful in the strength world. And I think we're foolish if we don't include CrossFit, like it or not, because they're drawing from Olympic weightlifting, strongman, and powerlifting. You're seeing a lot. It's not just the crazy running and swimming or whatever. There's a lot of things that are derived from the very sports that we're all involved with. And so what you're seeing, here's where we're being pivotal. You got someone like a Chloe Dublin, extremely talented lifter, crazy talented lifter. And she drove down to our gym to train one weekend. And she's like 17, 18 years old. And what you're seeing, and I had this conversation last Nationals with Dave Ricks, where you're going to see a change is now these kids are choosing strength sports, you know, as their sport. It's not like we came up, like me, we played football and wrestled, and some of us got to go to college. I know some guys that were pros in the NFL. And then when you hang up the helmet and the cleats, you need that competitive outlet.
Yeah.
And so we went to strength sports. Now these kids, and I mean, look at last night. There was 10 lifters, I believe, in the 63s, and I would say half of them were juniors. Well, that's nuts.
Yeah.
You know, or you're seeing these teenage kids that are competing, and they're competitive in the open classes. And that's where the advertising is going to have to latch on. I think that's where you bring in different companies. And that's why you see Meg, you know, get a Target deal, because you've got to find a way to create a connection to those types, power lifters in our case, to the general population. And I think that's where, are we going to bridge the gap where they're making money like an NFL player? No, the answer is no, that's never going to happen. But you can see that on the horizon that there's going to be a point to where they can make some money. And I think that for the sport to really grow, that's the direction we're going to have to head. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I think so much of it is tied up in the way that it could potentially be presented. Like, they do a good job with the live stream and stuff here and at IPF Worlds, but for it to be a television type of product, it can't be live because it's too long.
Right.
Yeah, so you have to take the meet, edit it after the fact to include the lifts that tell the story of the competition.
But they used to do that.
Yeah. I'm actually going to have a side project I'm going to work on about, like, Budweiser record breakers. But you have to tell the story of the competition, and a story has characters, so you have to develop those characters. Say, who is Jen Milliken? Who is Jen Thompson? Who is Samantha Calhoun? Why should I care about them?
Right. You got to create an urgency.
And present it that way. Last question. The first time you saw Jen Milliken squat, did you think to her, like, sweetheart, why are you going down so low?
Honestly, here's a great story. When Jen first came to the gym, I had heard of her. I didn't know who she was. Mm-hmm. And she came to the gym, visited the gym, and she was, I'm going to say she was at a crossroads in her life. I don't pretend to know. I could just, you know, you can tell. And she just needed a place to land and train and be what she was. And so that's what we provided. It didn't take long to you realize this is someone that potentially could be very, very special.
Yeah.
Her first few meets when I was coaching her were SBF meets. Again, you know, I'm involved and the meets are close, so we don't have to travel.
Yeah.
And she was notorious about, she would hit her lifts, but she'd get called on depth on her third squat.
In the SBF.
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Were you concerned the first time walking into USAPL meet? Did your skin burn?
Well, I remember Max. No, I tell you what my concern was. It was like I was worried about how I might be received,
yeah.
That people didn't know me, you know, that they thought I wouldn't have any integrity, and that because of, there's so many, again, underlying things that we've had discussions about in the past that people had no knowledge of, you know. And while I hope what I've said today doesn't piss anybody off, if it does, then so be it. It wouldn't be the first time that somebody's been mad at me.
You can just blame it on me.
Oh, I don't care.
Always, you know, the multiply people like to blame me. So.
Well,
Chad made me do it.
You know, stand in line, man, stand in line. Because if you remember, there was a hate forum there for a while where I was – White Light Johnson, you know, I was
White Light Wade, yeah.
You know,
that's
I was
a good
the pinnacle.
It's catchy.
I was the pinnacle, you know, yeah. of what was hated, and that's fine. You know, I stand by the things that I've done as a lifter and as a coach. For me, it was more about having an impact on the lifters that I work with, and if you, all you got to do is look around, you know.
Definitely.
I think we're doing that, and I'm going to become more involved as I can with the USAPL because I've always been drug-free, and we have representation in my state now, and that's really the reason why I went a different direction. And when I first started, you know, people don't remember, I did the WDFPF Worlds in 1999, so I've been around a while.
Yeah,
and that was the precursor to the USAPL, right?
Like back then, they had just made the transition to where, I mean, it was a little bit before then.
Yeah.
I don't know the dates specifically, but we didn't really have any representation in Tennessee with the USAPL, and I called the home office a couple of times, and I never got a return call. Well, I'm a young lifter, and I'm like, well, fuck them, and, you know, I started lifting in NASA meets. There's a whole story there, too. But I will say this, because I don't want that to be taken... I have the utmost respect for Rich Peters and what he does. That guy gets in a truck and drives his ass and runs 30-plus meets every year and drives that gear all over the country. I got nothing but respect for that. I don't always agree with what he does, but I rarely do, and that's why I've probably been a controversial figure in the sport, so to speak. But I got nothing but respect for what he does with that federation.
Where's your gym?
It's in Mount Juliet, Tennessee, which is just outside of Nashville. I'm about 10 miles away from Nashville Airport.
So if you're in the Nashville area, Ogre Power Gym.
The Ogre Compound.
The Ogre Compound with our man, Wade Johnson. Don't call him White Light Wade. All right.
Just on the internet.
Wade, thank you so much for taking the time,
man,
for your
candidness. I appreciate
candidness.
You guys having me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Always good seeing you.
Thanks, man.
Instagram for the gym they can follow?
The_ogre_compound is on Instagram. We have a new website that I have nothing to do with. The girls are doing it. It's theogrecompound.com. You can reach me at teamogre@outlook.com. If you're ever in the area, want to drop in, or if you need coaching, or if you just want somebody to look at your videos. I'm not one of those guys that, like, if you send me a video, I'll look at it. It's not going to be, well, I need you to hit my PayPal, you know. I'll look at it. I have no problem with that. So anytime, reach out to me anytime.
You can find me, Max_8 on Instagram or on Facebook. You can email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And if you love The Jug Life, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice. We always appreciate that. Helps more people find the show. Subscribe to the YouTube. World's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang, holding it down there all the time. And now 500-pound deadlifter in the USAPL, Shorty Sedang. And juggernautcoaching.com for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, and power building programming of all levels. Whether you're beginner, intermediate, advanced, we got something for you. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith, and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.